Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes the history out of the oldest and largest collection of public radio programming in the United States and puts it back on the radio. This week, we offer what may be one of the most important programs in our vast collection of 55,000 recordings. When I heard President Barack Obama acknowledge Seneca Falls, Selma, and Stonewall in his 2013 inaugural speech, he made history with this statement honoring those who struggled during those flashpoint events. As soon as I could, I looked in our archives public access database from my iPhone and found a program called The Second Battle of Selma, produced by the legendary Dale Minor. Minor, a journalist who had already covered the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings in 1960 and the 1963 March in Birmingham, Alabama, had an incredible way of bringing the dramatic events into the listener's home and giving them the experience of being there, rather than a post-event, detached, sanitized report. Here in the Second Battle of Selma, Alabama, Dale Minor brings the march from Selma to Montgomery to the Pacifica listeners in Berkeley, Los Angeles, and New York. This was recorded between March 9th and 24th, following what is now known as Bloody Sunday, March 7th, 1965, and was broadcast on March 26th, 1965, making it incredibly immediate to the subscribing members of KPFA, KPFK, and WBAI, Pacifica. One must make note that in 1965 there was no NPR, no PBS, and certainly no commercial media network that would dare air a program such as the one you're about to hear. There was no Corporation for Public Broadcasting to fund radio documentaries, only Pacifica Radio. We offer the first 60 minutes of this 90-minute treasure from the Pacifica Radio Archives. If you would like to hear the entire program, you can get a copy on CD by visiting us online at fromthevaultradio.org or calling us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. And now, for the first time in decades, we are proud to present Dale Minor and the Second Battle of Selma as presented by Pacifica Radio on March 26, 1965.
The First Battle of Selma occurred on April 2, 1865, when Union troops left a burning devastation of what was then a principal arsenal and arms manufacturing center of the Confederacy. In the spring of 1963, while one of Selma's sons, T. Eugene, better known as Bull Connor, commanded fire hoses and police dogs during the siege of Birmingham, field workers of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee began to prepare Selma for its second entrance on the stage of American history. 2 years later, after 8 weeks of skirmishing and preparation, another army of the North descended on this city of 28,000 on the Alabama River. An army very different in character from the first, a nonviolent army, whose weapons were the mass media and the moral consciousness of the nation, whose troops were mixed black and white, Northerners and Southerners, and whose vanguard was composed of ministers, priests, and nuns from every corner of the United States. A nonviolent army, yes, but lest the 100-year-old origins of this battle be missed, an army ultimately flanked by bayonets, and backed up by the military might of the United States. On March 7, 1965, 26 days less than a century after Union troops first broke through the town's defenses, the Second Battle of Selma was fully and irrevocably joined. Within a week, the issue was clear. The power of the Union had triumphed again, and 2 weeks from the day it began came the breakthrough, when Dr. Martin Luther King led an army numbered at 5,000 and growing each day over the Edmund Pettus Bridge and on its way to Montgomery, 50 miles away, a trek which many began to liken to Gandhi's march to the sea, but which white Alabama, more in keeping with our analogy, thought more like the seaward progress of Sherman's army. There is little question but that the march on Montgomery, whose numbers swelled to 25,000 on the final day, represents a dramatic victory for the Southern Civil Rights Movement after 10 weeks of constant struggle and effort. Indicators of the significance of that victory are many, from the near certainty of a new voting law, which could have a more profound effect in the South than the entire 1964 Civil Rights Act, to the active participation of Catholic clergy, nuns, and official church representatives in the demonstrations, to the President of the United States saying, "We shall overcome," to Congress and a national TV audience. But victory in the Second Battle of Selma was also the fruit of a decade of struggle in the South and across the nation, the rewards of which might be measured by the many significant changes in the state of Alabama since Birmingham. Changes reflected in newspaper attitudes and policies, in the increasing activity of the white moderates, dramatically in the presence of from 50 to 100 members of the Committee of Concerned White Citizens from several Alabama cities and towns who marched and demonstrated alone and with a larger procession on Tuesday, March 9, and in the March on Montgomery itself. A concentrated campaign had been waged in Selma and its environs since the first of the year, but only in the 2 weeks preceding the Montgomery trek did it become a battleground for forces and issues of such magnitude. And that, whatever they may say about outside agitators, the local powers that be pulled down upon their own heads. And the movement's strategy was predicated on their doing so. Satisfying as victory celebrations are, it is the process of battle, the decisions and actions of the combatants, the stresses and strains, strengths and weaknesses in the opposing armies that remain of the greatest interest. In these respects, the Second Battle of Selma was as enlightening as it was significant.
Remember that panic is the most important weapon that our enemies have. If they disperse us into a wild mob, we are not fulfilling our function. We cannot panic. Now, they may use tear gas. Tear gas is not a dangerous gas.
This is Dr. Boland of the Medical Committee for Human Rights, instructing participants in the march attempted on Tuesday, March 9th.
To tear, it may make you momentarily blind, and that's where the gas works. When you become momentarily blind, if you do not know it, you may become panic-stricken. Do not become panic-stricken. This is momentary. It will not last. Reach to the right or the left for your neighbor, your friend, your brother, who will help you and lead you out of the gas. Don't go running around wildly. Walk into the gas, into the wind, so that the wind will blow the gas out of your eyes. Do not rub your eyes. Do not bandage your eyes. We have ambulances, doctors, and nurses available to give you first aid. Don't panic. If you get beaten by billy clubs and you get hit on the head, if you are unconscious, make sure somebody stays with you. Make sure you... Let's put it this way. If you see somebody fall unconscious, stay with them, because an unconscious person may revive quickly and forget that they were struck on the head, and a few hours later, there is trouble. We must know of all people who have been unconscious. If a bone is broken, do not move the person. Summon our first aid people. We are there, we will be there, and we will continue to be there from here to Montgomery or wherever we're going. We will be there with you.
Before Dr. Boland instructed this audience, on the bloody Sunday of March 7th, Alabama state troopers and Dallas County sheriff's deputies used clubs, horses, tear and nausea gas, and smoke bombs to drive Negro marchers, beginning their first attempt to march on Montgomery, back across the Pettus Bridge and through the town to the Negro Quarter, clubbing them all the way. The result was 57 injured, 17 of those hospitalized, and an outraged focus of national attention that nearly pushed Vietnam off the front pages. In a matter of hours, Selma had escalated from a skirmish to a battle of strategic significance. In Atlanta, where he heard the news, Martin Luther King, who had been personally leading the Selma campaign, announced a second try would be made Tuesday, and called on clergymen and other concerned citizens across the nation to travel to Selma to lend the support of their presence. Tuesday afternoon, as hundreds from other parts of the country answered his call and prepared to face the troopers who had beaten back Sunday's march, and amid rumors that it might be called off, King announced his final decision to hold the march in spite of a federal court restraining order issued earlier in the day.
I say to you this afternoon that I have no alternative but to lead a march from this spot in an attempt to carry our grievances to the seat of government in the state of Alabama. I have no alternative on the basis of conscience. I have no alternative on the basis of morality. And I ask you to join me today. I ask you to join with me as we move on. And I must say to you that there comes a time when you must make a difficult decision. I haven't had much sleep over the night, maybe an hour or two, and all morning I've been agonizing. And I would not be honest with you if I did not tell you that it was a painful and difficult decision.
The agonizing began on Monday when the civil rights leaders learned that federal Judge Johnson in Montgomery would issue the restraining order. The rumor of cancellation had apparently originated Monday night with the leadership itself, before the results of King's call had begun to show. In the time intervening before the final decision was made and the procession began, Leroy Collins, head of the Federal Community Relations Service, flew to Selma and began a series of last-ditch efforts to mediate what seemed an imminent collision between marchers and troopers. And his efforts bore fruit. Though few of the marchers were aware of it, a script which avoided a clash and obviated Judge Johnson's restraining order had been written and tacitly agreed to by both sides, a fact which was to cause some bitterness and friction within the movement leadership. But on Tuesday afternoon, before the march began, little of this was known.
And I've made my choice this afternoon. I've got to march. Come what may, I do not know what lies ahead for us.
Tell it.
There may be some beatings ahead.
Yeah.
There may be some jailings ahead.
Well.
There may be some tear gas ahead.
Yeah.
I say to you this afternoon that I would rather die on the highways of Alabama than make a butchery of my conscience.
Yes,
the procession began moving about 3 p.m., its number estimated at 2,000, stopping at the foot of Pettus Bridge to hear a federal marshal read the restraining order to them.
Alabama, I would like to read to you an order issued by Judge Johnson. It says in part, it is well ordered to judge to the decree of this court.
Can I make way?
And other members of that class, as those acting in pursuance to them, be and each is hereby enjoined and restrained from attempting to march from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama, until this court can have a reasonable opportunity to make a judicial determination as to the prospective rights of the parties in this case. It is put on to join the decree of this court that the motion is granted for a preliminary injunction. B and C is hereby set for a hearing to commence at 9 a.m. Thursday, March 11, 1965. On this 9th day of March, 1963. Frank M. Johnson, Jr., United States District. I'm in no way
moving on the basis of conscience and what we consider a deep moral principle.
I am in no way going to interfere with your movement. I was instructed by Judge Johnson to read the order to you.
Thank you.
Read us the names.
Thank you.
May we move on? Hey, Shimon, you people make room right here.
And then they continued over the bridge to the far side of the Alabama River, where the troopers awaited them.
You are ordered to stop again. Stand where you are. This march will not continue.
And the march has stopped perhaps 30 feet from the line of state troopers who are cordoning off both sides of this divided highway. King now is speaking to the troopers, to their head. It's not possible to pick up what he's saying from this point.
This march will not continue. Is not conducive to
the man on the bullhorn is Major John Cloud, leader of the trooper detachment, who also commanded the operation on Bloody Sunday.
So, as of now, it will not continue.
Martin Luther King now replies, but his reply is drowned out by the jets overhead.
You can have your prayer and then return to your church if you so desire.
Noted as they're singing the verse of this song that there are several hundred white people from various parts of the country and a surprising number of white people from the state of Alabama, various localities, including Selma. The front rank of the marchers have joined hands in a circle now and are singing.
And now the procession turned, as agreed, and made its way back by the same route to its starting place at Brown's AME Chapel on Sylvan Street. Back at the church, King answered reporters' questions.
One of the strongest judges in the South, and I'm sure he came to this decision on the basis of good faith and honesty.
Pardon me.
On the other hand, we felt with all of these people that have responded to our call from all over the nation, and because we had a basic constitutional right to do this, that this was an unjust injunction, and consequently we made the decision to go on. This doesn't mean that we have lost respect for the federal courts. It simply means that we had a decision to make in this specific instance. And this is the particular instance rather than a general conclusion that we've reached.
Dr. King, did you say you had decided in a strategy meeting before you got there that if the way was clear to hold your meeting and come back?
Yes.
In other words, you had decided that if you got that far, that you would not go on to Montgomery today.
That's right. That is, if they were there, we made it clear that if we could move on today, we would, but if they formed the human line and told us that we couldn't go.
What about when they moved out from in front of you?
Well, we had already asked them to let us go on, and they said we could not. You see, he had already said that you cannot go beyond this point. I said, well, can we pray and have some song? And he said, all right, you can do that and then return to the church.
But we had already made the decision last night.
Dr. King, did you make this clear at that time out there, or did they know about this before you arrived at that point out by the bridge?
Well, now, they may have known it, because I told the Attorney General in no uncertain terms, and I told Governor Collins that we had to march and that we had to at least get to the point of the brutality on Sunday and stand up to the state troopers that we couldn't retreat. So they may have gotten the word over to them. This is a real possibility.
You made your point there.
Do you know whether Governor Collins, when he handed you this slip of paper with a route on it, do you know whether he had, prior to that time, talked to Jim Clark and Colonel Lingo?
Well, I think he probably did, because when he handed me the paper, he said he thought things would work out, but he didn't go into detail.
The possibility he had cleared that route with them before he gave it to you, then.
Yes, that's a real possibility.
Thank you, gentlemen. Dr. King has a meeting inside.
And then from the church steps, he spoke to the crowd of marchers around him.
I think I can say without fear of successful contradiction, we had here today the greatest demonstration for freedom, the greatest confrontation we've had in the South by the thousands, and if my eyes are serving me right, I would say around 4,000 of us were able to do something in Selma today that we've never been able to do before. Last night and this morning, as we grappled with the problems that we face here, we made a decision. First, we decided that we would have to march today, that we had a sort of divine imperative facing us, and that we had to go through with it, come what may. We decided that at least we had to move to the point where the brutality took place Sunday. We decided that we had to stand up and confront the state troopers who committed this police brutality.
Yes, sir.
Now, we also decided along with that in accord with our nonviolent spirit, the nonviolent movement, that we would not seek to break through a line of state troopers that assembled there, but we made it clear that we had to march. And today I'm proud to say that we did march, we did reach that point, and we stayed on the highway of the state of Alabama, and we had a prayer service and a freedom rally. This has never happened before. Now, as you know, we have many things to do, and we have many challenging days ahead.
You are listening to a 1965 Pacifica Radio original documentary on the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, March 9th through the 24th, 1965. We present the first 60 minutes of the 90-minute program. If you would like to hear the program in its entirety, you can get a copy on CD by visiting us online at fromthevaultradio.org or calling us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. And now back to the program broadcast to Pacifica Radio subscriber listeners on March 26, 1965.
A visibly angry James Foreman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee spoke to the group in rather different tones.
Just a moment. Now, we have to raise in our minds why it is that people got beaten Sunday when they crossed that bridge. Why is it that the state troopers put tear gas on people? See, when they said, you know, this march is dispersed and then go back, we have to find out why is it that tear gas was used Sunday? Why were horses run over people? Why did people get hit with billy clubs? Why that didn't happen today? These are fundamental questions that we have to raise within our minds. And I'm very sorry, you know, I can speculate on a lot of things. Now, I'm wondering if the fact that just because there were a lot of white people down here today, that this happened. Now, if this is the case, and I think, you know, I'm certainly happy to see all the people that came down, but if this is the case, then what does this say about this country? What happens, you see, if just the Negroes from now, right now, decided to go back across that bridge, what would happen to them? Just Negroes. See, what would happen to them? Now, these are, just a moment now, please don't, I don't want anybody tapping me on my shoulders and everything else, because I got something I want to say. Hey. See, now, these are questions that we have to raise within our minds. And then when we go home tonight, we have to raise it. Now, you see, I'm not at all apologetic because, as I said, I paid my dues in Selma. And the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee has paid its dues here. And there's going to be perhaps some injunction against Sheriff Clark around the whole question of voting. But you have got to raise with yourself, why is it that Jose Williams and John Lewis and your sister and your brother got whipped Sunday and nothing happened today? These are the questions that you must raise in your mind. These are the questions that you must discuss with your neighbor. Because fundamentally, you see, I think that the federal government is involved in all of this. You see? So that says then that 1,000 or so white people representing high church officials come into Selma, Alabama. Mrs. Douglas, who's incidentally is the wife of my senator. I used to live in Illinois. All right, so she comes down. Okay, but what about Susie Jones who walks up to that line? What happens to Susie Jones? Or what happened to the woman over there at the hospital, at the Dunn Hospital? That's it, I recall it. The women that got beat over there done by people who were in the posse of Sheriff Jim Clark. And what did the federal government do then? And what did the federal government do on October 7th, 1963 at the first Freedom Day in Selma? The first Freedom Day when the concept of Freedom Days originated right here in Selma, Alabama. When there were some 400 people lined up at the courthouse and Sheriff Clark wouldn't allow us to take sandwiches across the street. And Mrs. Boyington walked across and Chico Neblett was beaten. Now, what is the difference? So that's what you have to ask yourself. Is it, are we free just because there's a whole lot of 1,000 people down and then we're permitted to do something and then we turn around and come back? What happens if you decide to walk to Montgomery, if you go down to the courthouse without Mrs. Douglas or without Bishop Lord, and I am not at all talking against him, but these are the questions that you have to raise.
The friction was not quite out in the open, but its vibrations were being felt. That night at a mass meeting in the AME church, Fred Shuttlesworth of Birmingham fame, and one of King's own lieutenants, seemed to echo Foreman's theme, at least superficially.
That it is ours to say this day the same as it was when the clanking of the British Army was heard on the Boston plains. We must say, give us liberty or give us death.
Yes, sir.
Now, we are going to the courthouse tomorrow. And we're going to remind Brother Jim that Al acted pretty good today. But we also should remind Brother Clark that if they beat any heads on the courthouse tomorrow, they're going to have to beat some more in the streets tomorrow night, because we're going to march night and day until we get this thing over. Now, of course, Brother Clark is bothered. Now, I doubt if he's going to get any sleep tonight. Of course, there were times I understand he could have got some sleep and didn't. When you were marching in Marion the other week, and Marion is not in Dallas County, what in the world was Jim Clark doing down there teaming up with Al Lingo? Beating heads. So we're going to say to him tomorrow, you lost some of the sleep you ought to have. None of us going to sleep. We're going to stay woke until we get our rights. But the chief spot in this whole black belt is a certain spot about 46 miles from here. And there is a beautiful state capitol building, the dome of which can be seen glittering for miles and miles around. And you see, I don't know whether we'll be able to walk all the way. I don't know, Marge. We'll have to work that out, won't we? Yeah. But you see, it is our job to do a little acting over there. Now, I don't know what the document will say. I'm not sure what it will say. I don't even have to read it myself. I want Dr. King to read it. But I want to be there so that if his hands tremble, I want to be like Moses, he stand and hold his hand, so read it strong, we mean what we say.
Shuttlesworth also had bad news to tell. Earlier that evening, James Reeb, a young Unitarian minister from Boston, was beaten with two other white ministers by four white men as the trio left a Negro cafe several blocks from the church. Reeb was able to walk back, but soon collapsed and was taken in an ambulance to University Hospital in Birmingham, 90 miles away.
Now I have another announcement to make that is not a delightful announcement. And that is that we have just received word. Thank you. That our young ministerial friend who was beaten up a while ago is still in the hospital and in a critical condition. In fact, he's in a coma. This says to us that despite the fact that some bad boys acted foul and nice today, that ours is still a violent country. That despite the fact that we proclaim ourselves as a Christian nation, and indeed the spiritual leader of the world, America still has too much violence in its borders.
Wednesday morning saw the friction within the Selma movement coming to the surface. The compromise worked out between leaders of the march Tuesday and state and county authorities was engineered with heavy pressure from Washington to avoid a clash by allowing both sides to step back from collision and still save face. But to some of the younger demonstrators, Martin Luther King had saved less face than the troopers. The dissidents pointed with bitterness to a newspaper story Wednesday that indicated the troopers were under orders not to resist the procession if it insisted on continuing past the agreed-upon line. Others contended that the story was a plant or leak from the office of Al Lingo, Alabama's public safety commissioner. But the story had already had its effect, and Wednesday morning, Selma's Negro student group was demanding action.
Lights out. You want this? I don't know why. You don't want to turn around. Okay, just a minute. What do you propose to do? Let's see hands from somebody. Yeah.
Sit down.
Yeah. Kneel down.
Sit down.
Have a mass meeting where you stop. What's that? Let them drag you out.
While King and Abernathy prepared for federal court hearings in Montgomery, the problem of the young dissidents was left to two extremely able officers of the Freedom Army, Andy Young, speaking here, King's second in command, and James Bevel, SCLC's director for the Alabama Project, both of whom are hugely popular with young people. They accomplished their task successfully, but not easily, and not by any means all at once.
We have to have some reason for doing anything that we do. Now, I would say that There ought to be some reason for stopping there. If we are stopped, say, right here at the corner, I don't see any reason to have a mass meeting there. Now listen to me. The reason we would stop, if they stop us downtown and try to stop us, then I'd say, okay, let's have a mass meeting, because there, the whole purpose of a demonstration is to witness to the truth. But you have to be witnessing to somebody. See? Now, if we stop right out here in front of the church and sit down, we're really not doing any more than we're doing right now. We're sitting down witnessing to ourselves. It might make us feel good, see, just to sit there, but frankly, if you want to do it, it's okay. But I can't see it right now. What's that?
Sit down until they move out of the way.
Sit down until they move out of the way. Now, that means that, but the real situation here is they don't have to move in the Negro community. There's no danger. They don't have to move us. They can just sit here, and we can sit here all night or the next two or three days. Now, we've done that in some places, that may be something you'd want to consider.
Yeah.
I need some help. Huh?
Yeah.
You want to take it over? I'll let Bevel deal with it.
Thank you very much.
You have to keep this in mind.
We are not trying to beat the hell out of Jim Clark. That's not our program. We have to understand. We're not after Jim Clark. We have to understand that. We're not after Mr. Baker. In America, a bad political situation has developed because Negroes can't vote. And we have to understand that. The minister was hit last night over his head because a bad situation has developed and created a lot of hate in the white community. It's unsafe for a white man to come preach and go into a Negro restaurant. He get beat over the head because law enforcement has broken down and because there's a lot of frustration in the white community. Now, we are trying to address ourselves to that, and in order to address ourselves to that, we accept suffering and we commit ourselves to being truthful and loving. Now, our demonstrations to do several things. One is to speak to the Negro community and the white community and then the broad American community. That's our job, to speak, to make the people focus their consciousness into their consciousness the problem. Now, we assume that the people have been thinking about it, that you, the people who are here now, last year and year before, you hadn't really thought about it. You hadn't really sat down and decided or tried to go through the creation of Harlem or Chicago. You really never sat down to think about the suffering of people in a community when they can't vote. Now, in order for that situation to be eliminated, whether I like middle-class white people or not, middle-class white people are going to have to focus their consciousness on the problem before it's going to be eliminated in America now. Now, you in the dilemma that I've had all the time. What do you do? Now, some Negroes have been picking up bottles, throwing. Some Negroes have been spitting white folks' food when they cook for them. People have been doing all kinds of things. Some Negroes have been getting drunk, coming home, beating their wives. But here we are, asking for the right to express a grievance, and there the police standing down saying, no, no, not only are we not going to give you your rights, we're not going to even allow you to say you don't have them. And that's the dilemma for Negroes, especially when we have no money, when we have no political power and very little education. That's a problem. What do we do? And so a lot of times we may be slow in terms of people say, why don't you get the demonstrations out on time? And sometimes we don't, because we are agonizing over the whole question of how can we best communicate. And this is what some people don't quite understand. I think a lot of us need to understand, how can we best communicate? How can we best communicate our concerns for our community? How can we best communicate so the nation will see the problems and Jim Clark can see the problems? And these are the problems that we have in terms of making decisions. And this is why we stay up many times at night. Because if it's a simple problem on how to humiliate Wallace, we know how to do that. But when you're saying, in light of all the frustrations in Wallace's background, how do you communicate? How do you get through to this man? It becomes a very difficult task. And this is some of the dilemma that we're in most of the times. Now, let me explain something. We work in teams, basically, because the pressure is so great until I get to a point where I don't know, and then I have to call back on Andy, who about at this time should have decided what we're going to do. Now we have another fella.
After two frustrated attempts to march to the courthouse that same day, the controversy over tactics continued.
Whether you're ready to face it or not, the movement is dying down. The movement is dying down because we're being stopped too often. I think it's about time we move, because the longer it takes, the more Negroes are going to be killed. And as long as we don't do anything about it, they're going to keep on being killed. And there's something we can do about it. We can march and protest. And there's no need of talking about we can put it off until tomorrow, because tomorrow won't wait. There's something that we got to do today. And to prove that we are men and citizens, and that we are Negro race that are proud of ourselves, we got to face the posse no matter what happens. We got to show them. We got to show them that the Selma movement is not going to die down because of a few billy clubs. It's not going to die down because a few people get hit. It's not going to die down because of hurt feelings. Now, everybody that are visitors here, if I'm right, you came to see what you could do to help the people in Selma, right? What I want to say now, most important, right now, today we don't need financial purposes. We don't need sympathizers. We need somebody that's going to march with us.
The reply is made once again by Andy Young.
Now, while you all were engaged in confronting the police down here at the corner, there was another demonstration in process. We pulled about, I guess, almost 200 people out of the line. We had to do it without you realizing it, because we didn't want the police to realize it too. And everything we do in here ordinarily is taped and recorded. The purpose of this group was, while you all had the police detached down there, was to filter through the alleys and lanes down this way, back around the church and all down Water Avenue, to get down to the courthouse to have a demonstration. And we had a demonstration at the courthouse. Now, in order to get change through Congress, we need to organize this tremendous force of public opinion, which we have here.
That's right.
The reason all these good people came down, they got jobs, they got families, they stopped what they were doing to come down here to witness with us, to help us change. Now, the purpose of this morning's demonstration down there was to demonstrate to this nation that some 30 states were represented here on the side of Negroes voting. If you get 30 states willing to ratify a constitutional amendment, you need 38, but you get 30, you can get the other eight, see? That if you get 30 states willing to move on the question of voting rights for Negroes, you're pretty sure of getting a voting bill through Congress. Now, what we do, therefore, our main role is to keep public opinion and the moral sentiment of this nation with us. Now, we can do that just by going about our business peacefully. Now, we almost had it today. Those couple of hundred of us that went down were walking around the block.
And it's something. Now, you may not think this is a demonstration, but when a Negro, you know, man walks down the street holding hands with a white woman in Selma, Alabama, it's a demonstration. And there were people in integrated groups that just quietly walked around the courthouse. Just quietly walked around. Now, we had intended to stop at the courthouse steps. But by the time we got there, the posse had so ringed the courthouse that it would have just been really suicide to try to go on across there. And frankly, I have to measure what I'm going to get for what I give. I'm not going to pay a man $1,000 for a ham sandwich. If all I got to get is a ham sandwich, I'm not going to give him but 50 cents. See? Now, if all I'm going to get is a voting bill, and right now it looks like that's about all we're going to get in a court case against Jim Clark, I have to ask myself, how many knots on my head is it worth to get a voting bill? See, now I decided, I don't know about you, but I decided that there had been enough knots in Marion, Alabama, there had been enough knots across that bridge, and there's one man dead and one man dying, and that's enough to pay for a voting bill.
That morning, about 300 demonstrators, including a number of ministers who had remained in Selma, and six Catholic nuns from St. Louis, attempted to march from Brown's Chapel to the courthouse. They did not get there, and it was clear before the demonstration began that they really didn't expect to.
I think we have a lot more power in this demonstration to speak to the nation than we ordinarily have when we are just here by ourselves. So, what I'm proposing for our demonstration today is that we march out of the church together. That we march as far as we can. If we can march to the courthouse, fine. We march down there and stop. If we can march to the couple of blocks away, fine. We march down there and stop. But now what we do when we stop is we testify. And I would like to kind of call the roll for a minute. Now, we can't get everything and everybody, but I think it would be it would be good, because we need to realize that we're not only speaking to Commissioner Baker and Jim Clark, we're speaking to the millions of people that are informed of what we're doing through the television and newspapers and radio stations who are covering our demonstration. So I'd propose that we march as far as we can march. When we're stopped, that we begin to preach to whoever stops us, knowing that you're preaching to the nation. And I'd suggest in your preaching that you'd say in 1 minute why you're here and what it is you're protesting. And I'd suggest that we now get representatives. We can't hear everybody.
The group, led by the local SCLC leader, the Reverend L.L. Anderson, was stopped half a block from the church by Selma's Public Safety Commissioner Wilson Baker and Mayor Joe Smitherman, backed up by a line of city police.
Reverend Anderson, you cannot march today.
You have been informed that we have an order. We issued this order. You have informed of it. There will be no marches in Selma. You will be stopped if you attempt to march. You know this. You will not march today.
We, Your Honor, Mr. Smitherman, the Honorable Mayor of our city, we want, and the Honorable Chief Director of Public Safety, we are here not to rebel your orders. We are asking only, and we feel that we're not asking too much, that you would permit us to march to our courthouse, that we feel that's paid for by our firms, and that we need not be registered voters to be citizens, but we do want to become registered voters because we think it's our God-given rights under the Constitution of the United States of America.
You have had opportunity after opportunity to go to the courthouse in peaceful demonstrations. We have enforced the laws impartially. It's gotten to the point we cannot allow any more demonstrations. It's in the welfare and the interest of this city. You have this order. It has been put out. You understand it. I expect it to be obeyed. You can stay here and make as many statements as you want, but I expect this order to be obeyed.
We have many persons that we would like to state their position. They would like to make a brief statement. Sister Antona of St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm a sister of St. Mary.
She is a Negro, a member of the Negro race.
I am a Negro, and I'm very proud of it. I feel it a privilege to be here today. My name, as they have said, is Sister Mary Antona. I'm from St. Louis in St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm stationed at St. Mary's Infirmary. The Sisters of St. Mary, through my superiors, have sponsored my coming to...
And as television cameras whirred, some 30 individuals stepped forward to make more or less brief personal statements, addressed really to the television audience more than the mayor, who had turned his back and walked away.
Mr. Truman Morrison from Michigan.
Yes.
Did you come?
Yes.
I'll tell something more about him.
Yes, I'm from Edgewood United Church in East Lansing. I'm here from Michigan because I believe that millions of Americans are here in spirit with the people of Selma as they seek to bear the brunt of the struggle for civil rights and full democracy in this country.
Mr. Morris Samuel of California.
I am Father Samuel from the parish of East Los Angeles here.
Father Samuel.
We are here to help support and hold up the hands of the great prophets like Martin Luther King, members of SNCC, and to protest the things that have been going on in Selma. And we are here because this is where Christ is and being witnessed to in this city.
God bless you. God bless you. Dr.
Now, I am Dr. Homer Jack from the Unitarian Universalist Association. I'm here representing Massachusetts. I represent the spirit of the Boston Tea Party, the first direct action in our country. I represent the spirit of David Thoreau, who gave so much insight to Gandhi, and we're experiencing a Gandhi march today. I represent the spirit, most important, of James Reeb, a fallen comrade who lies near death at this very moment in the University Hospital of Birmingham.
My name is Robert Albritton.
Albritton.
I'm a Presbyterian University pastor at the University of Virginia. And I come here with a Roman Catholic priest, Father William Stickle, and several University of Virginia students who are all from the state of Virginia, and one of them from Tennessee, to join with the Negro people here in Selma on behalf of hopefully thousands of white Southerners who join with us in sympathy and in feeling for this cause.
After the statements, the demonstration turned back to the church. It was at this point that the group Andy Young referred to before slipped away by twos and threes to assemble a brief demonstration at the courthouse. But at the same time, about 200 youngsters had decided on a march of their own and damned the torpedoes. They moved in the opposite direction down Sylvan Street, where as yet no police barricade existed, and turned on Jeff Davis Avenue toward the downtown area. They were stopped after another block by Commissioner Baker, who had raced the length of the block with a contingent of state troopers, arriving just barely in time to head them off. Even then, the youngsters were reluctant to retreat.
I mean it.
Come on,
have your attention, everybody.
Hold it. Hold it.
a demonstration order now. Let's get in line. Let's get in line, everybody. Let's not have a mob. Let's get this together.
Come on, get back. Get toward the line.
All right,
now. All right. All right. All right. You're on the man. Let's get in line. Let's order up. Let's go back to the church.
All right, you're going to have to go back to the church one way or the other. All right, let's get back to the church. Back to the church. I'm telling you to go back to the church. Some of you ministers that created this are going to have to live with this. Now get your people back in the church. I'm going to have the people, police officers move in and put you back in the church. Now I don't know what to do there. So let's go on back to the church. Either go back or we move you back.
Finally persuaded by the pressure of the police line and a group of ministers, they turned back into Sylvan Street. There, at the intersection, occurred one of the many striking tableaus of the week. Some 20 dark-coated, high-collared ministers and priests locked arms in a line from sidewalk to sidewalk, with the children behind them, facing a parallel formation of twice that many blue-uniformed, helmeted troopers. Public Safety Commissioner Wilson Baker is one of the principal and certainly one of the most interesting actors in this drama we've chosen to call the Battle of Selma. And while the movement had its internal problems, the dilemmas besetting Wilson Baker proved that compared with the problems of the racist power structure, the movement's troubles were minor indeed. "I'm a segregationist," the New York Times quoted him, "but if I were a nigger, I'd be doing just what they're doing." Alone among city and state officials, Baker commands respect, if not universal liking, from most of the militant Selma Negroes. And the corresponding displeasure and even contempt of the more rabid racists, Sheriff James Clark, chief among them. He has even begun to lose the support of some of Selma's white moderates, who feel things have been allowed to go too far.
And we have to leave our program there for today. If you would like to hear the entire 90-minute program, The Second Battle of Selma, visit us online at fromthevaultradio.org to get your own CD copy, or you can call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. You can search our collection at pacificaradioarchives.org, where you can also make a donation online to help restore more programs like the one you just heard. A special thanks to Dale Miner, who made radio history with this incredible documentary. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, supported by Pacifica listeners, the Pacifica stations, and the Foundation, and funded in part by grants and partnerships like the Internet Archive at archive.org and University of California Berkeley Moffitt Library. I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for keeping our history alive. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday.